Okay, so, Perek Vav. And then this is the end of the narrative section, then we go to the prophecies, which Gevalt. Good. Vidaryavesh medaya kevel malchuta kvar shnin shitin vitartein. So, Daryavesh is 62 years old, and he becomes king. Now, Chazal in the Midrash assume that he is... Perek Vav, yeah.
Okay.
Perek Vav. Last week was Belshazzar, and the writing on the wall, so now we're up to... So Daryavesh was 62 when he became king. Chazal assumed that Daniel is basically the same age, right? That their lives basically map.
This is also weird because it's talking as if Daryavesh immediately ascends the throne, inherits the throne, like a dynasty, and said it, he like...
Correct, it wasn't really. There's a war. Right, there's a war. Right, there's a conquest. Right, but that's not how Tanakh talks. Right, Tanakh talks as Belshazzar dies and Daryavesh takes over, rather than there was a Persian overthrow of the Babylonian Empire. Okay, fine. That's what happens.
Also, and then Daniel just kind of
is still there.
Yeah, exactly.
Gets transferred into.
Correct. What exactly happens? Who knows? But in the meantime, Shvar Kadam. Now I love this parak. So you appoint 120, they call it satraps, I don't know, but okay, to be in charge of the whole kingdom. Now this is very Persian. This is very Persian.
Like the former government.
Yes. Look, we talked about this. You remember we talked about this last year from Ray Tarrigan, his very sharp point, which is why is it that this seems to be the most important people in Esther?
Right.
Are the people, are the messengers, right, who run the laws around the country?
Yeah.
And the answer was because the Persia was such a big empire that in order for it to be effective, you needed to have bureaucracy and you needed to have it effective and you needed people to, you needed to trust the people who wrote the laws and brought it to the far-flung parts of the kingdom because you didn't talk to them directly, so you needed to trust them implicitly. And that's why it's so important. Now, this becomes clear here because in Persia, something that you learn very much in Esther and is very evident in Perek Vav of Daniel is who is the real king in Persia? The law. The law.
Right.
The law is above anything. How do you know? So the thing about Esther, and you'll see why this is important.
The seal.
And what's the rule in Persia?
Oh, you can't overrule...
Correct, in Lahashiv. And therefore, when Esther begs Ahasuerus to override the rule...
He has to make a new rule.
And it's not, the Jews aren't going to be killed. It's, the Jews are allowed to defend themselves. Which, at the best, is meant to confuse people and maybe give and encourage them to defend themselves and maybe encourage their enemies not to actually fight. But he can't override the rule because... law is above anything. Now, why is that true?
It's so big
that in order for it to succeed, Rav Meidan says this is sort of like America, right? The claim, it's the first culture where you see that in theory, the law is above the people, right? It's just so big, you want it to last, so the law is consistent above anybody, even the king, even the emperor. It's not completely true. Because theoretically, law is supposed to control people's desires and the like. And in Esther, it's totally, totally... Yes, the law is supreme, but laws are passed about things that are completely trivial. Right? Like, the law is that everybody should be allowed to drink whatever they want. Like, that is the contradiction of law, right? It's totally v'nafochu. The law is that there is no law. You can do whatever you want. We impose that into... That is written into the law books, that there is no law. Like... Mapito, right? The law is that every wife must listen to their husband. It's crazy. The whole country is crazy. Right. Because they worship the law. They're so over-law focused that law is just the means by which they do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Oh, you should get rid of your wife, but instead of getting rid of your wife, just divorcing your wife because she bothered you and she didn't listen to you, make a law for the whole country and Mimela, she violates the law. Like, it's a very screwed up law system, but the Maisa law is supreme.
Do you think the Torah is comparing it to the Jewish law system?
Maybe cynically.
Right.
And cynically,
right,
sure.
Right, right, yeah.
Sure. Well, of course, because what is it contrasted to?
God's unchanging law.
Well, if you follow just the word dot, who has a different dot?
Mordechai.
Haman says, I want to kill the Jews because dat tehen shonot. Their dot is different than our dot.
Right.
Meaning, so that's where you get it. Yes, it is being contrasted because the Jews are the only ones who have a different type of dot. Mm-hmm. We have this type of chaotic, insane dot, and they have some other dot. So you should kill them.
Right.
Okay. Okay. But so this is very in line with what we know from Esther. The Elay min hon sarchin plata di Daniel chad min hon. And above the 120 were the three rulers under Daryavesh, of which one of them is Daniel. So, yes, this is quite strange, because somehow Belshazzar died, and Persia takes over, and Daniel goes from being important in Nebuchadnezzar, basically persona non grata under Belshazzar until the last moment, then Belshazzar is killed, to being the one of the three people in charge of the kingdom, and the Yosef thing being shoved in your face, right? This is the person that the only person above them is the king. And this is like Yosef, Mordechai to a lesser extent, Yosef Mamesh, that's Daniel. And in case you were wondering, amongst the three, who is the top of the three? Daniel. And Daniel did not have a mitnatzach al sarichaya. Daniel surpassed all the other ministers by virtue of his extraordinary spirit, and the king considered setting him over the whole kingdom. Okay, right? This is.
Yes.
Now, that leads to disaster. So the ministers and the satrap looked for some fault in his conduct in matters of state. And they said, ugh, we hate this guy. Maybe he did something wrong, we can impeach him. And the answer was, nisht, nothing. He never took a bribe, he never took a cigar, he never took ice cream, nothing, right? It doesn't matter how much you hate him. Right. This is always the thing that whether you think BB is guilty or not, the point is that he doesn't. You know, whether you think he's momish guilty, he did things that were at least questionable. So if you're looking to get him, you'll get him, and that's basically the argument of the right, which is, oh, he's really innocent, but they can't deny that there are things there. Right. Daniel is like, again, I'm not weighing in on BB. I have no idea. No, I'm not saying bang gacho bang. The point is, whatever he did, he clearly did things that.
It's clear.
No, the point is,
it's not Daniel.
No, that's the point, is that he did things.
Yeah.
Daniel didn't even do those little things, right? He never took a cigar, so no one can even say, oh, that was a bribe, if you wanted to come up with a taina. Maybe it's right, maybe it's not, but like.
Is that one of the claims on Bibi? He took a cigar?
Oh, yes, that's an actual one. That's not the most severe. There's a much more severe claim, which is the negotiations with the news. I don't want to get into that. But one of them is that he took cigars from a friend of his, and they're viewing it as a bribe. Okay, fine. Again, I don't want to weigh in on BB. The point is that if you look at that and say, really, you're going to topple a prime minister because he took cigars from an old friend, and you're going to view that as a political bribe, right? That's it. The answer is, maybe, look, either it's illegal or either it's not illegal. Right, if something is like has a shemetz of it might be illegal, and so then when you have an enemy, it'll be blown up, right?
Sure.
But Daniel, they couldn't find anything, right? Look, same with Trump. Do you think he should be impeached? I don't know. Has he done things that if you don't like him, should be impeachable?
Yeah.
Yes. Right. There are definitely. He's definitely not squeaky clean. Right. Is he? Is it impeachable? I don't know, right? I'm not going to weigh in, and definitely not in recording. I'm not going to weigh in. I have no idea. But the point is, they couldn't find any of that with Daniel, right? Because they said nothing, no negligence, no corruption. No negligence. There's no incompetence, no nothing. He's like perfect. They said, ugh, we're not going to find anything with Daniel. That's it. The only way we're going to do this is we're going to find something with his religion. Now, there are certain people, and Rabbi Dan goes in this direction, but I really don't agree, and I agree with other mafarshim on this one, who say, oh, this is the beginning of anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. I really disagree that that's not what's going on in this story. Because it's very clear, it's why are they going after Daniel?
Because they want his position.
They're jealous. Yeah. How do we know that Why do I think this is not anti-Semitism? I agree with them with the, sort of the commentaries to say, what do you, Mapitom?
Because they started off with other things.
Yeah, meaning they don't care about his religion. They, like, looked for corruption so that they could depose him. It didn't work. So they said, oh, he's a frum guy. If I find something in his religion that I can come up with a claim, so I'll do it. Meaning, that was just a way to get Daniel out.
Can you say, like, Haman is the first beginning of anti-Semitism?
Right, so Haman is a better example. Because also, if you contrast this to, right, some people will say, oh, look, this is exactly like Esther. And there are similarities, we'll see in a moment, to Esther. Except here, it's only against Daniel.
Right.
There's none. It's not Daniel as a Jew. They are looking for something in his religion so they can catch Daniel. But they're not saying, oh, let's kill all the Jews. It's, let's find something in Judaism so that Daniel can be deposed. They don't care about anybody else. Let everyone else do whatever they want. Right, this is not, so I'm totally compelled that that's not the issue here. They don't dislike Judaism. They like dislike Daniel. And if they could have, they would have said, he took a bribery for cigars. They couldn't find the cigars. So they said, okay, so he takes mincha breaks. And we're going to see, that's essentially what happens. Fine. So that's what they did. So they say, So they go to Daryavesh and they say, listen, O King Darius, live forever. Now this is where you're already going to see the Haman thing, the Esther things, which is, we have a law we want you to pass, but we will pass it, we will pretend that it's in your best interest. And that's where you see law being misused, that's what you got in Esther, when he didn't say, I hate the Jews, he said, oh, datehen shonod ve'ein shaveh. It's not worth it for the king to keep them around. They don't keep the laws of the king, right? You should get rid of the Jews. So this is, and he says, ityo kol asarchei malchuta signaya v'achshavarnaya hadevraya v'chavata lekayama ki amalkal dat uletakafa esar dichol diyevei bo min kol ela. There's definitely someone who's going to listen to this recording and think I'm weighing in on the BB case and the Trump case. I'm not. I'm just using this as an example, okay, people? So he said, here's the law that we suggest. Anybody, we should make a royal ban that says that anyone who petitions anybody, a god or human being, for the next 30 days should be thrown into the lion's den. Now, what's the logic?
He's going to petition God.
Oh, no, that's why they want to do it. What's the logic they're presenting to Daryavesh? Why does this even make sense?
So that everyone's under the same umbrella of gods. Everyone's like...
No, it's to a person. To a person or God, anybody.
Ooh.
Why?
So they bow down to Daryavesh.
See, it was only for 30 days. Why?
Because they know he's going to dove in at some point with them.
What are they passing? They hasn't told. What are they trying to pass? How are they passing this off to Daryavesh?
Is it a power move?
But what's the power move?
That I can tell you whether you can bow down or not.
Yeah,
I control.
Correct.
Bow down to.
Exactly. Well, it's the way it seems to be. Is this is the beginning of the Malchus, and they say we have an idea how to solidify your kingdom for the next month. If anyone wants anything, they have to ask you. They can't ask anybody else, right? For a month, we're gonna drill into people's head that you're the final address for everything. Now, taken literally, and this is I was listening to a shir. I think it was Gad Eldad. I'm not sure it was. I have to look back who it was at some point during the week. But I really like the shir that I was very careful reading the Perek. And he said, "Look, the law." Like, it makes sense in that context, the beginning of the political system. But there's an ambiguity in the law that can explain how Daniel ends up getting trapped in it. Which is, does it really mean what it says? If you take it literally, that means if I went home today, I was living in Daryavesh, and I said, Ora, can you pass the water? I'd be killed. That's a request. That's a petition. Right? May I please have the water? Throw the light. Is that what it means? So there is an ambiguity here where you can't have any petition, but the question of what counts as a petition is not clear. And that's why the Mefarshim debate, did Daniel quite know what was going to happen to him by davening? Right? Did he know exactly what was going to happen? It could be that he really did. It could be that lo me'achuz, that it was enough ambiguity in the law, they were hoping to catch him, but if he hadn't realized this was devised to catch him, he might have thought, okay, like I can't make a the request of some other king or something like that, but like my normal, or I can't make a unique request, right? Maybe that's what it means. But if I daven every day anyways, what, I'm not, I have to stop my normal routine? How does that play? I mean, there's enough ambiguity here that on the one hand, you could say the fact that Daniel's about to daven is very much in your face, which definitely has some of Farshim take it. Or you could say he didn't quite understand what was going on and because he didn't realize there was a plot against him. So what happens? So he says, Kan Malka Tekim Esarav Tirshem K'tava Dilo Lashnaya Kedat Masdaya Faraz Dilo Tedei. Put it in writing so that it will be unchangeable like the doors of Madasa Parai, right? This is very Persia. So he did. He put it in writing. Now, I happen to, on the one hand, I'm sort of sympathetic to saying maybe Daniel didn't really understand what was going on because you can see that ambiguity in the law. On the other hand, I tend to agree with the Mefarshim that, no, this does seem to be a bit in your face because the next, it's vid Daniel, right? V'Daniel ki gidei yediya dirishem k'tava. As soon as he found out that such a law had been passed, all of itay v'kavin p'tichin le b'ilata neged Yerushalayim. Now, there's some mafarshim who say he didn't think he'd get caught, right? He just didn't process. But again, there's the Malbim, or the Barbanel said he didn't really think he'd get caught, like he just didn't process. Malbim says, "What do you mean? Look at what it says. As soon as he knew the law, he went to his house, went up to the attic, opened the windows neged Yerushalayim." And he would open the door, daven, three times towards Yerushalayim, just like he always did. And so you could have said he just ignored it and like didn't think it was relevant. And, but it sort of sounds like it's contrasting. Don't do this. And he says, yeah, whatever. Go up to the window, open the door. Daven it. Now, there is another ambiguity here, which is technically he didn't violate the law as you read this pasuk. Because what was the law?
To make a request.
To request. What does he do? He thanks God. He praises God. So it's not actually clear that this actually violates the law.
Right.
So you can come up with all types of mixes. He did violate the law and he didn't care. He didn't think he'd be caught at all. He didn't think it was illegal. Or he didn't care. He wasn't technically violating the letter of the law. But he was doing something that if someone wanted to catch him, he sort of realized what, maybe he did realize what was going on. If he did realize, why could you put your life in danger? Yeah.
It's just a separate question. If we use Daniel as like a source for...
I'll make that point first. This is Chazal's source for that famous halacha that if you're outside of Eretz Yisrael, you daven towards Eretz Yisrael, and then you daven towards Jerusalem, then you daven towards the Beit HaMikdash. Daniel is one of the sources. He's also the source of the fact that you should daven in a place with windows. All this we learn from that. Daniel is the first person we know who davens three times a day. That's the source for davening three times a day in Tanakh. He's the first person we know who davens daven towards Jerusalem. He davens where there's windows. Daniel is the source for everything. So if the question is Daniel the source for blank and tefillah? The answer is yes. Every single thing that you think.
How come we would ever say Marav is Rishus?
Because it's not clear Daniel's doing the sechiyah. If Daniel does it,
yeah, it seems like they're abundant after Daniel.
Daniel does it, right? Yeah. Doesn't sound like everybody else does it. That's exactly the point. They're not getting anybody else.
Well, why can't we just say he's no hake to have a window? He's no hake to face your.
So again, you could say you're not chayiv, but they're saying when we're inspired and we set up the rabbinic takano, Daniel is our model.
Yeah.
Daniel was the first one, and we said, "Hey, that's a great idea," which makes sense because remember we've talked about this that Daniel is the model of the Jew in Galut. How do you survive?
Right.
And the answer is, part of it is, you make sure to daven three times a day. And that you face Yerushalayim, and you think about Yerushalayim. That makes sense. If you're living in Galut, how do you constantly remain oriented towards the idea that we're going to return like this?
Right.
And they're just waiting at the door. They're just waiting for that moment to catch him. It's a sting operation. They come thronging in, is how they translate it in the JPS, and they find him petitioning. And this is where it's very unclear, because it switches words. He praised, they find him petitioning. So does that mean they caught him and he was actually doing bakashot? Or they assume he's doing bakashot, but he's not really, and he never defends himself, or he can't defend himself, or who knows what.
Well, according to the Rambam, the Dereisa includes Bokasha, so...
Oh, correct!
It would make sense.
But, yeah. Okay.
But, yeah.
But anyways, Be'adan Karivu Amrinan Kadamalka, Lasar Malka, Halo, Asar Rashamti, Halanashti, Amin, Kola Love, and Ashad Yomit Latin, Lachminach Malka, Yitrame, Lagovarivata. O King, don't you remember that you wrote a law that anybody who davens should be thrown in? And this tells you that this wasn't like. He like passed it, he says it's a good idea, but he wasn't like invested in this law. You remember that law that you put? And this is entrapment for the king, because as we'll see, he's really upset about this. He likes Daniel a lot. He doesn't want this to happen. And he says, so what does he say? And this is where you see this obsession with law. He says, you're right, I said it. Therefore, the order stands firm as a law of Medes and Persia that may not be abrogated. Or that's his response. It's a law, you're right, it's the law. Nothing I can do about it. And that's what they want. Because they know he's not going to want to kill Daniel. Right. And this is where some people think he gets anti-Semitic thing, because now they call him, oh, Daniel, one of the exiles of Yehuda, lo sam alach. Again, I still think that that's not the motivation. It may be by the end they use a little bit of that, you know, sort of, but it sounds like not. It sounds like he's just identified. He's identified as. Part of it is he's identified as B'nei Galuta D'Yehud on the positive also. Right. That's just the way he's identified often in Sefer Daniel. So, and the whole first 15 psukim of the chapter, of 13 psukim, don't sound like this is anti-Semitic. They're just trying to get him. And they don't, even though, yes, they call him the Jew, they don't try to hurt anybody else. They're just describing Daniel from Yehuda. Lo sam alach malka te'im, v'asara dirasham t'vizimnin klata b'yoma be'ed ba'atu. They said, oh, you king, he pays no attention to you. Three times a day he offers petitions to his God. Edain Malka Kedi, and this is amazing. Edain Malka Kedi Milta Shema Sagi Be'esh Alohi Val Daniel Sambal Shizavuta Vamale Shim Shavu Mishtadar Latzaluta. The king was very disturbed. He set apart his heart upon saving Daniel. And until the sunset made every effort to rescue him. And this is the crazy thing. But he doesn't want to. He loves Daniel. And he's like, oi, and he spends all day trying to figure out, is there a way out of this law? What did I do? What did I do? Gevalt, they've caught me. But Dain Guvraya, Ileh Hergisho, Malka, Vamrin, Malka, Da Malka, Di Dot, Lamadai Farazi, Kalat Sarvakim, Di Malka, Yakam, Lelashne. And what do they come back? And they come and say, oh no, king, that any ban the king issues under sanction of oath is unalterable, right? You see, they've entrapped him. It's totally clear. He knows what happened. They come to him and say, oh, you think you can find a way? No, there is no way out. This is how Persia works. You are trapped to the law, which, parenthetically, explains why this law made sense. If you think that this law is to strengthen his malchus, this shows you how weak he is. I mean, they are pushing him around. Yes, it's true that the law is the law. But if the king is really powerful, he'll say, well, I don't care what the law is, go away. But he can't. It really is true that his power is weak. That he's still solidifying his government. So when they come to him and push him in the law, it makes sense. There is something, there's a petach there when they say, for the next 30 days you should do something to solidify your government, because you see, in his relationship to them, he really is that weak. So Badain Malka, Amar, Vaiti Daniel Ramalu Gubadi Arva Vatane Malka, Vamala Daniel Hach, the Ant Plach, Lebetidira Hushbizinach. And then he says something amazing. So they bring him to the lion's den, and they throw him in, and the king says to Daniel, your God, who you serve so regularly, let him save you. And I really liked how this person put it in this year. I have to look back what it was. It was like, I just went to Tanakh.com and just pick,
is it Tanakh.com?
HaTanakh.com. It's good. It's one of Gush's many websites. It's an excellent website. Because in every parak in Tanakh, it has articles, shirim, kitzurim, and the maps. I've showed you the maps, no?
Yeah.
It has the map of Tanakh, the biblical map, right. And you superimpose it with Google Maps on the modern maps. You can see where everything is. Amazing website. So they also have all the shirim from the Meyun B'Tanakh at Gush. So he reads this very nicely. He said, what is the king really saying to Daniel? And it's an amazing moment, because if you think about Daniel, we've talked about how it's meant to theologically educate people. What does he say to him?
May your God save me.
But it's even more powerful than that. I can't come up with a way of saving you, but your God can. It's not just let your God save you. It's I've spent all night trying, and it didn't work.
Right.
But hopefully, your God who you're praying to, which is the reason you're being thrown in, he can come. Because I couldn't. He's already acknowledging that before anything's happened, he's acknowledging that God has power that he doesn't have. And Nebuchadnezzar took the interpretation of the dream. Dariavesh, and this is why Chazal think Dariavesh, again, the chronology is a bit off here, because right, historians think that Daniel comes and then Esther. But in Chazal, right, Esther is first, and Dariavesh is the son of Achashverosh, and Esther is therefore Jewish.
Right, but
and the reason they go in that direction, because you see how sympathetic he is, that he already, before the miracle happens, he believes in God.
Yeah.
So, he, or at least is noted to it.
So, Dariavesh is the... I mean, Daniel, we said he was like the servant of Mordechai or something?
Yeah.
So, right, Chazal, right, Chazal who flip it, right, who put Daniel and then Esther and then Daniel, so say that, yeah, Daniel is at some point in that... in that kingdom also. Again, how do you work out all the... Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed this before because we had gotten the other thing.
Wait, one second.
I need to make this point because then I'm going to forget a second time. Is tefillah Yehar Gvel Yavor? So Sefer Hasidim actually learns from this that it's not Yehar Gvel Yavor, but it's a mitzvah Hasidus to give up your life for tefillah from Daniel. And he has two rayos. One is Daniel. The other is that the Gemara seems to indicate that because... the source in Chazal for this weird drasha of Nishmartam Ol Nafsho Seichem being about saving your physical life, which is not what it means in context in Tanakh, where it's in context it means Nishmartam Ol Nafsho Seichem to not make an image of God because you did Lora Itim Kol Tuna. Who makes that drasha? So there's a story in Gemara Brachos Lamed Beis that a guy is davening, a Roman officer is coming to him, and he says hello, and he doesn't interrupt. And afterwards he says, "Why didn't you interrupt me?" He said, "Why didn't you interrupt me? Why didn't you interrupt while you were davening? Don't you know that Torah says, and I could kill you?" And he says, "Yeah, but if you were talking to the king and then someone else came to you and asked you something, would you interrupt yourself? Would you interrupt?" And he says, "Of course not." He says, "Well, I'm talking to the King of Kings." So he says, "You see that he risked his life. So you can risk your life. It's not chayav, but you're allowed to risk your life for tefillah." Other people say no. I think it's Tosos says no. He was just convinced that he would be able to convince. He knew this particular Roman. He said, "I'll be able to talk it out. It'll be fine." He wasn't really risking his life. The alternative is to say that this is the other category, that this is Shas HaShmad, or Kiddush Hashem, where certain things are allowed that wouldn't be allowed normally. Sorry, what were you saying? Now that I got that point out. What? The chronology, Chazal put it, right? Chazal put it first. And again, how that works, how he's in the person, I'm not really sure. Right, if you put it that way, okay. Because Dariavesh is not immediately after Belshazzar. There's a Persian governor Imin in the middle there, or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, and also how was Persia? Oh, there's an assumption that there's a kingdom in between the two stories.
Yeah, you have to put that.
These chronologies, stories happen in between the first.
That's what you have to. Right, that's what you have to assume. Above. Correct. Okay, so they put him in. Vehitei Evan Chadav Asuman Al Pum Guba Vechatmi Malkav Isgad Isgad Rav Rino He Dilotish Neitzavu BeDaniel. So they put a signet. They put the rock over the den, and they put two signets on it: the king and his officers. Why do they do that? And again, this comes back to the same theme, because neither of them, the law is supreme. So the king can't. The king can't say, "Oh, I'll put my seal on, break it, get Daniel out, and put the seal back on." And neither can the officers. The law is supreme, and therefore they both have put their seals, so neither of them can go and try to undermine the law. But what does he do? He goes to his palace and spends the night fasting. No diversions were brought from him, and his sleep fled from him, which is amazing, because this is Esther all over again. But the king is fasting to reverse his own decree. Right? Not the Jews. The king is fasting to save the Jew from his own decree. Again, you see this whole... And we'll try to finish quickly. As soon as dawn comes up, he runs to the lion's den. Said Daniel, "O servant of the living God, did the God who you serve so regularly, was he able to save you from the lions?" Where this is like this emunah, he's like hoping against him. He's like, "I couldn't save you, but you daven every day. Is your God this miraculous, amazing God? Can he save you?" He says, O King, live forever. And this is fun because it's not clear he's talking about Daniel or Hashem, because that's the purpose. And I think that's the purposeful ambiguity here, is he's responding to Dariavesh, except he's in response to, did your God save you, the real king? And the answer is, someone live. I don't know. And he says, Elain shloch malchaz ged pumar yavata velo chibluni kolkava dikadomi zichu da hashka ha. Said, God said his angel to shut the mouth of the lions. They did not injure me, and I was found innocent by him, and I've also not sinned against you. And this is where it's amazing, because this comes back to the point, did he really sin against the king? And the indication, if you take Daniel's word, the answer is no. That he didn't, at least he didn't think he was. Maybe he knew what would happen to him, but he really was committed to the king. He never violated the law. And his proof was, look, he saved me. So, and this supports the read that he wasn't, maybe he was doing something stupid politically because he realized it was entrapment at some point, but he didn't quite really think this was, either this wasn't a violation of the letter of the law, or he thought maybe it is a violation of the letter of the law, but it wasn't a violation of the spirit of the law. So, king, I really wasn't rebelling against you. I never was. I was always committed to you. And again, however you want to read it, I could see it going either each way, right? One is, he knew he was violating the letter of the law, but said this is not the spirit of the law. Same way, again, to my example before, someone asking his wife to pass the water violates the letter of the law, but no one would think that that's what you're going to be sentenced to death for. Or he just, or plus the fact that he praised, again, remember that was that nuance, that he praised God. It doesn't say he requested from God. They say he requested from God. So again, maybe he really didn't violate even the letter of the law. You could read it either way. But the point is, he doesn't think he really rebelled against the king in any substantive way. But then Malka sagi to Eva loy Daniel amar lechazn. The king was glad. He brought Daniel out of the den. No injury was on him, for he trusted in God. And this is obviously Hananiah, Mishael, v'Azariah. But you get the exact same thing again.
Didn't smell like smoke.
Didn't smell like smoke. Exactly. The exact same Kiddush Hashem, except this time the king, Meikara, wants this to happen. Va'amar malka va'atayu guvraya ilech diachalu kartzoy di Daniel gubaya vata rimo inun bein anrushen lomato la'arat guba adi shalda v'honari vata v'chol gamayin la'adaku. And then you get the same thing you have in Esther, which is, I may not have been able to overturn that law, but I will make a new law. And my new law is, all those people who slandered Daniel, you and your whole family and children and wives are being thrown into lion's den, and they didn't hit the bottom of the pit before they were killed. They were eaten up. Now, by the way, who else does this whole story remind us of?
Yosef.
Because if you remember this week's parsha, it's a good parsha to do it. Yosef is also thrown into a pit by the people who are talking. Lashon Hara is involved, though he's the one telling Lashon Hara about them. He's thrown into a pit, and the way Chazal understand it is very much in line with Daniel. Oh, there's no water, but there are dangerous animals. Right? It's very much Chazal reading Daniel and Yosef together, and he gets out of it, and that's what leads him back to his position of power. V'chulei, right? This is very Yosef-like. V'adayin Daryavesh Malka, and then in our education theme that has come throughout it, that every time a miracle happens, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Daniel, this leads to the king saying, God is true, everyone must serve him, and this is the total flip. Before, you weren't allowed to petition anyone except for Daryavesh. What are you going to be now? What's the law going to be? Everyone has to?
Petition to God.
Has to, not petition to God, but it has to be in fear of God. It starts with this law of fear him, and he says, B'adayin Daryavesh Malka, K'tav L'chol Ammai, Umay L'shayna, Darim V'chol Arash, L'mechon Sagi, Min Kadamai Sim Te'em, Di V'chol Shaltun Macholte L'hon, Zayin V'dachal Min Kadamai Allah, Di Daniel, Di Hu Elaha, Chaya, V'kiyam L'almen, Machuta, Di Lo Yitchitchabel, Shadayat Sofa. I hereby give an order that everyone must tremble in fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God who endures forever. His kingdom is indestructible, and his dominion is the end of time. Right? This educational theme of all these miracles, and again, of Daniel being successful to do that, because this could not be more different than Esther. Same kingdom, similar themes. God is not mentioned once. And here, what? No open miracles. God is never mentioned, as opposed to here, open miracles, and the whole point is at each chapter to get to a king saying, God is true, God is true, God is true, God is true. Meshazavid umetzel va'aved v'atent t'minim v'shmai v'arad yishziv ladenel midyan arvayata arivata. And he said, I know this is true because his God delivers and saves, performs signs and wonders in heaven and earth. And he delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. But Daniel di Hatzlach Malchut Daryavesh did Koresh Parsa. And therefore Daniel prospered during the reign of Daryavesh and of Cyrus. I can't get into the chronology right now. It confuses me to no end. But that's the parak. And again, I think it fits a lot of the themes that we've seen. It's a wonderful parak. Again, I really don't think it's about anti-Semitism. It just doesn't fit the trajectory of the parak. Anyways, I'll let you go to Ray Hirschberg. But at least we got... I love this parak. I really do. This is Aaron's favorite parak. In the middle of the night when Aaron is screaming, my four-year-old... This is the parak. My four-year-old in the middle of the night when he's screaming and I need to calm him down with a story. It's either this or David and Goliath. That's it.
Aramaic?
No, I tell him the story. It's in the middle of the night, dark and whatever. I struggle through the words in general. And I'm sort of embarrassed to even put it on recording.
Right.
Do you seem to... You know.